I also want you to know that in my head, when I was like, we're going to do a March Madness, and then I was like, we should do sports music, and I just went, da, 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 and I was trying to do, like, sports music in my head, but all that came up was the Star Wars soundtrack, and then I tried to do it again a separate time, and I just got, like, the Marvel intro.
Hello and welcome to Animation Medication, a semi-weekly deep dive podcast on all things animation. My name is Andy. I will be your host for today. With me, as always, my lovely co-host, Nadia.
Hello!
And special guest for today, Leah.
Yay!
Hello. Semi-special, I would say. I'm only a little special. Yeah, I'm not here to provide any insights or opinions. I'm here to just make special effects in the background.
And here, our voice actor, Leah, who will be reenacting every character from every movie that we talk about.
Out me swamp, donkey.
Now you got to do all the ants.
It's... I legitimately cannot remember a single name of a single ant from the movie Ants. Like, I'm just... My mind... went completely blank when you said that.
The trauma response hit in and you were like, I don't think I've ever seen that film.
Yeah. What are these?
A movie about ants? Who would make that? Not me.
I mean, I watched that movie twice and I don't think I could tell you a single name from a single character in that film.
Did you watch it twice for this episode?
Yes, I did.
Why?
Did you watch it twice for, like, business or pleasure?
Like... Yes.
I watched it twice, but only because I fell asleep the first time and then had to rewatch half of it because I was asleep.
All right. Well,
yeah, that really bodes well for that film.
Yeah. Let's get into this, and then divulge that a bit further when we get to that. Anyway, welcome to our March Madness bracket happening. Late March and early April, because there's no way we're finishing all this at once.
Yeah, March and March extended is the new
March et al.
Yeah. For those new to how brackets work and what we are doing, I've taken all 39 of DreamWorks animated films. I have organized them in list by their general ratings, and I have given them seeds for a bracket accordingly. They have then been thrown into a tournament-style bracket where the bottom nine got cut out, and the top 32 are going to fight it out for best film.
Yeah, I just gotta say that I have pretty much lost all faith in people's ability to decide what is and is not good. Because I was like, you know, I watched these films and I was curious. I was like, all right, like, what was the overall rating they got on, like, Rotten Tomatoes and general, you know, other review sites? And my God, did I disagree with essentially all of them. So that
yes,
was fun.
No, that is. For the record, the films that have been cut are Shark Tale, Shrek the Third, Sinbad Legend of the Seven Seas.
That is it. That means,
The
that
Road to El Dorado.
Which
that
was
one, that is
a,
bullshit. The fact that Madagascar 3 was on this and Road to El Dorado was cut is a crime against humanity.
The fact that Madagascar 1 was on this and then, like, I was looking through and I was like, Road to El Dorado's got to be here. And I was like, oh, well, maybe it's just not a DreamWorks film. And I looked it up.
Mm-mm. So, yeah, the way I did this is I took the average of Rotten Tomatoes, Metacritic, and IMDb, because those are the three critic reviews that pop up when I Google a film, and I didn't want to have to individually parse out a fourth source for all 39 of these films.
Yeah.
And
I believe it.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree with you. I think The Road to El Dorado is... definitely a film I would like to discuss on a later date, because
yeah,
it did not deserve
to be
Much like El Dorado itself, it's a hidden gem in the woods of South America.
We can stick it to the man by being like, we're gonna dedicate like 2 minutes to each of these films, but Hal, Road to El Dorado gets an entire episode screw you. Yeah, I double checked, I had like 48% on Rotten Tomatoes, which, and I was
it did not do well critically.
No, and I started to look through some of the reviews, and some of them I was like, okay, I understand this, but some of them, anyway, sorry, keep going.
Yeah, the last three films are The Bee Movie, Home, and The Boss Baby.
Okay.
Good.
So, I mean, so that, to be fair,
that
of,
makes a lot of sense.
Of the seven that got cut, a majority of them are actually very bad, yes.
Yes. I just have issue with Sinbad and El Dorado. Ah, a moment of silence for our fallen friends. R.I.P. We love you.
So should we just
take this is a moment of silence?
This is a moment of silence, Leah.
Oh, wow.
Shoot, sorry.
Wow. Disrespectful. No, I'm ready.
All right, are we ready?
Let's dig in.
First matchup, we have our number one seed, Wallace and Gromit and The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, going up against our 32 seed, Shrek Forever After.
I picked Wallace and Gromit. I'm
basic. Me too! I thought you were going to fight me about that.
No, I genuinely really like Shrek 4. I think it is a good film, but I mean, Wallace and Gromit is just so fantastic. Also, Claymation is the love of my life, and I think it is a really sweet film, and I had a strong foundation, and also they were all upset about vegetables, which is pretty much my entire life, so.
I think also, like, Shrek Forever After was good, but I feel like I was thinking about it sort of like, would this movie kind of be as good as I thought it was if it wasn't the fourth in the movie, like, or the fourth in the franchise? Like, I don't necessarily think it was a strong movie on its own, but I thought it was a really, really strong conclusion to the previous movies, which made me feel like, okay, this is like a good movie because it kind of fills in the gaps. It gave me the ending that I really wanted, but if I were to just watch this movie independently, or like, if, you know, out of context, like, I didn't think it would be as good as Wallace and Gromit.
Yeah,
I
so
agree.
Shrek Forever After is a film that we have already done an episode on, so yeah. I'm not going to go too deep into why I think the film is good. I do think the film is good. That being said, I think it makes for very good fan fiction.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if I can put it above in such a well-crafted film like Wallace and Gromit and The Curse of the Were-Rabbit. Like, so much care and attention to detail has been put into that film that I don't know if I can put it above. Which is a shame, because I really wanted Shrek Forever After to do somewhat well in this. Mm-hmm. But the fact that it has to go up against the number one seed, the fact that it has to go up against franchise that has a lot of love put into it, it just makes it so hard. I definitely agree with you too. This is a fairly easy win for Wallace and Gromit and The Curse of the Were-Rabbit.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. So good.
So the next one that we have is Abominable versus Over the Hedge, our 16 and 17 seed films.
Okay. I actually had a really, really hard time with this one, which I was not expecting.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not have a hard time with this one at all.
Oh, no!
I have a fairly clear set winner here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, go ahead.
Well, no, just give me your thoughts on both the films.
See, I was really waiting for you to both be like, it was really easy, and then both say the opposite movie.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that moment, too.
Okay, so here's my thing. I really liked Abominable. I liked it a lot. It is not a super fantastic film, like, in terms of its originality, but I just thought it was really beautiful and really sweet, and I genuinely enjoyed watching it. Not because of its, like, story, but it gave me this weird experience of, like, I like to rewatch stuff a lot because, you know, it's comforting and nice and I return to old favorites, but sometimes I just want something new that's like a new story, you know, not something I've seen before. And this was the weird perfect combo of, like, I got to see a new film, but it was really predictable and kind of easily consumable, so it felt like I was able to rewatch something while simultaneously also seeing something new. So it felt kind of like a nice warm blanket. but, like, not an original blanket, I guess. And then I was expecting to really hate Over the Hedge, so I think just the fact that I enjoyed it was so much of a surprise that I was, like, taken aback by that and, like, paid it more attention. And I also thought it had a really, really sweet story about, you know, found family and, like, learning to work together, and I genuinely enjoyed that. So that's why I had a hard time, but I ultimately picked
Abominable. That's absolutely fair. Leah, what are your thoughts on both these films?
I think that, so it's funny because, like, I feel like for the reasons that you liked it, Nadia, I really didn't like Abominable. And it's not that I, like, hated it. I just felt like I was, like, up until the time stamp, I felt like I could predict it. Like, I was like, oh, well, at, like, minute 24, you know, they're probably gonna have this person say something like this, or, like, this plot point is gonna happen. And so that kind of made it difficult for me because it felt so much like a Disney movie that would have come out, like, 10 years ago. And that even Disney has sort of moved on from that formula because they realize that people have gotten tired of it. It wasn't bad by any means. Like, I thought it was a perfectly okay movie, and I would show it to a child, like, absolutely. If I had a kid that was, like, you know, 6, 7, 8, I would be like, yeah, let's put this on. It's, you know, it's a nice lesson. There's a nice, you know, animation. And one of the comparisons that I had while watching it was like eating spaghetti, where it's like, I know what's going to happen. I know what this experience is going to be like. This experience isn't going to be, like, new and exciting and different for me. But, you know, I'm going to enjoy it while it happens. And, like, it's not going to be life-changing, but, like, I like spaghetti. I'm happy to just, like, sit down and eat a bowl of it sometimes. And Over the Hedge did not really leave that much of an impact on me. It was sort of just like, eh. I was like, I guess, you know, it felt very sort of early 2000s. I thought that the story was kind of interesting and fresh, but I didn't feel like it was particularly, like, groundbreaking. And the humor was a little bit,
yeah, predictable. That's for me. Pretty fair. It's pretty fair.
Yeah.
I like the fact that they were demonizing the suburbs. I was like, yes!
Yeah, that's fair. No, that's fair. I definitely agree with a lot of what both of you had said here. I think Abominable is a film that, had I not gone into it having consumed decades worth of children's animation and knowing all of the tropes and the different story beats that they would go through, I would definitely see myself enjoying it a bit more. If this was, like, my first DreamWorks film that I'd ever seen, I definitely would see myself enjoying it more than I actually did. Mm-hmm. But it is very cookie cutter. It is very by the books. I'm not going to say I hate twist villains, which this one kind of has. But the way this one is revealed is not at all good.
Yeah. No. Although, well, I did think it was sweet the way that the old man ended up, like, not being evil, but the way that the woman ended up being evil
No, all right. Minor spoilers for the film Abominable.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Whoa.
There's a nice animal-preserving lady who's like, we need to save the Yeti. We need to be like, this is our Yeti. We need to treat him well, keep him alive, and be all good towards animals and things. And then it's later revealed that she actually is just in it for the money and hates animals and has been putting on this persona. But, like, the person you're working for doesn't care. He just wants this Yeti. You don't need to put up this facade. It doesn't help you
at
all.
That's true. Yeah, what? Who was she doing that for?
Like, why are you... What is...
Because she didn't care.
That is such a good point.
I guess she ultimately wanted the Yeti to be alive because she would get more money for it. Which is why she was pretending.
Then she can just say that. I don't think he cares.
That's also very
He just
true.
Wants proof that this Yeti exists.
So why did she need a new accent to be nice? You can be nice and have an American accent.
What?
I know.
Whereas, like, Over the Hedge, while an altogether fairly mediocre film, has has a consistency that I don't think Abominable quite has. It is a story that, well, the liar revealed story is something that we're going to touch on a lot throughout the course of these DreamWorks films. This film does it in a way that actually makes sense. You understand the motivations of all of the characters, and the story overall is very well put together from start to finish.
So what did you ultimately pick?
Oh, I'm picking Over the Hedge.
I knew it! So you and Leah did pick opposite ones!
Yeah, yes. Well, I think like that liar reveal story really plays into like what I was saying is like, well, why, you know, you were asking like, well, why did we have this evil villain who had a secret accent identity? Like, why did we have that? Oh, it's because that's what you're supposed to do in a movie like this. Like, there wasn't a creative decision for it. It was just like, oh, well, in movie like this, you just have lady who have two voice. And so I ultimately, I picked Abominable only for the reason, and I'm like not willing to die on this hill either. There's a few in here that I'm like, I'm willing to fight with this, but I picked Abominable only because I feel like if I had a child, which one would I rather show it to? Or which movie would I rather... Would I feel more comfortable just sitting them down and being like, okay, watch this movie? And ultimately, I feel like Over the Hedge... Like, the lesson in it is kind of less solid and good than Abominable.
Really? I thought the lesson of Over... That I was, like, expecting to hate it, and then... This whole idea of, like, working for other people and being a team and learning to forgive and learning to, like, become a part of a whole that is more than you individually was really, really sweet. Whereas, like, Abominable had a good message, but it was pretty much just, like, I don't know, love your family. Whereas this one was, like, Over the Hedge was, like, love yourself. Hmm. And then also learn how to love and care for others also. But it did definitely have that kind of, like, early 2000 DreamWorks sort of trashy humor. Like, you watch it and it feels dated, whereas Abominable felt old, but only in the sense that, like, the story itself felt overdone, whereas Over the Hedge feels weirdly dated in its, like, animation and also kind of humor. But I overall do agree with Andy that I think the characters themselves were way more fleshed out in Over the Hedge and were... But again, I was also really unsure for this one. I really expected it to be super cut and dry, because Abominable was a movie that I'd been wanting to see. So I was like, oh, I'm going to love this. And then I enjoyed it. But then I watched Over the Hedge and I was like, oh, I'm going to hate this. And I also enjoyed it. So I think expecting to like something and having it be mediocre and expecting to hate something and then have it be mediocre, I'm more inclined to be like, oh, the one that surprised me is nice. But I also did pick Abominable. So I don't know, man.
I don't
know.
I think that this Abominable especially kind of proves something that I have been thinking about a lot while watching these movies, of like, DreamWorks is its strongest when it's not trying to be Disney. Mm. And every movie that it felt like they were trying to be Disney fell really flat for me, and every movie that they were very much trying not to be Disney ended up being much better. Because it was, like, something that, you know, Disney would never do, so it was just more generally interesting, I guess.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because DreamWorks is a company that was started explicitly to not be Disney.
Yeah, exactly.
I think in terms of the issues with the humor with Over the Hedge, I think Over the Hedge coming out, I think it's, like, shortly after Shrek had come out. Mm. And it sort of tries to do this whole thing where we're leading with our cast as opposed to the actual story that we're telling.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which, like, I get it. Steve Carell is funny. Steve Carell naming a bush Steve is funny.
Wait, who does Steve Carell voice?
Steve Carell voices the squirrel.
What?
The one that has the Quicksilver scene at the end.
It literally doesn't sound like him. Like, I wouldn't guess that, and then I looked it up.
I had no idea.
Which, like, this film is pretty star-studded. And I honestly don't think that a lot of the actors do a terrible job.
No. Huh.
Yeah.
So like, who are we gonna ultimately pick, folk?
Well, I have one vote for me on Over the Hedge. I have one vote from Leah on Abominable, and I believe you had left yourself up in the air.
Yeah, I did ultimately put Abominable, but I was sort of unsure about it. So I have a tentative Abominable. Mainly just because that's probably the one that if I were to rewatch, I'd rewatch that one.
Yeah.
But also only because it's easy to watch and I'm riddled with anxiety, so.
I mean, my vote was for Over the Hedge, but of these two films, Abominable was the one to make me cry.
Oh.
So I'm not against giving that the win.
Okay. Let's go. That was my gut instinct, so I'll stick to it. But I was very excited that Over the Hedge, I thought was like, you know, it surprised me in a good way.
I mean, granted, I did cry to the song Fix You, and, like, I think that's more because I have an emotional connection to that song outside of this film, but... Anyway.
Okay, so we're doing Abominable, then? That's our...
I believe that's what we landed on.
Yep. All right,
locking in
final
our answer.
Locked in!
So, Kung Fu Panda, our number 8 seed, versus Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron as our 25th seed.
Should we all say what we picked on the count of three?
And I do just want to say one thing. Spirit Stallion of the Cimarron is not a film that I had seen or even heard of prior to doing this.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I saw it in theaters, and I used to play horses with my friends. We would each pick, and I was usually Spirit, and they were usually the pretty girl horse, which is... pretty much tracks with like the rest of my entire life and existence. We would just pretend to be the horses and we would play Spirit. And then I also used to listen to like this little kid radio station that used to air during the weekends. And they used to play the song that Get Off of My Back. And I used to run around the house and like get really into it and like dance around to that song. So
anyway,
since I was a kid.
having come into this and never having experienced this film, is really good.
It
was really good. I'm assuming we all picked Spirit. Is that?
Oh no, I'm picking Kung Fu Panda.
Oh, okay. Oh. Wow. Well,
I guess Andy, do you want to talk about your decision first?
So, Kung Fu Panda is honestly one of the strongest animated films I've seen. The humor gets me, the story gets me, every aspect of this film gets me, and this is, even the later franchises, Kung Fu Panda 2 and 3, I think are some of DreamWorks' best work. I love Kung Fu Panda to no end. Spirit, very strong film. I'm honestly not against, it sounds like I am being outvoted here, and I am not... I'm not mad about it, but I cannot vote for Kung Fu Panda here.
Okay, this was one that I had a really hard time with, because rewatching Spirit, I was like, holy crap, it was such a beautifully animated film. Like, there's just a scene where they're walking across a landscape, and it's like, during a lightning storm, and it's pitch black, and then there's a crash of lightning, and it illuminates, like, the people walking, and I cried, because I was like, that it just was so beautiful that I was like, oh my god. I had a really hard time with it, because it's basically just a movie riddled with tragedy, which is pretty much what I avoid watching anything that is sad. And Spirit is pretty much just like, it's like, one sad thing after another, one emergency after another, one tragedy after another. And I don't think I'll be able to rewatch it for like another 10 years. I do not think I can emotionally handle rewatching Spirit until I'm like,
oh no, I absolutely
40
agree with
years
you.
Old. Like I don't think I would revisit this film.
I think if we had gotten like 5 more minutes of Spirit with his family, this film would have broken me. Like, absolutely broken.
100%, yeah. And it's really hard because I think that, like, visually, it is unbelievable. And I think that the way that they don't have... I mean, they have the voiceover, they have, like, Spirit's voiceover, which I don't even really think is necessary, and I kind of wish they didn't have it. But the fact that they don't have the horses talking,
like,
the communication that they show is so, so unbelievable, and they do it in, like, glances and body language and, like, these little things that I just thought were so unbelievably done. And then Kung Fu Panda on, like, the other end, I also really love Kung Fu Panda. It, like, in terms of, like, message and in terms of plot and in terms of characters, I really love it, but I didn't think that it was as creative or original in its mode of storytelling. And I think why I ultimately picked Spirit was because I thought that it was, like, I think Kung Fu Panda is a better movie, but I think Spirit is a groundbreaking movie. And I don't know if that makes any sense. And if I'm, I don't know. But I thought that, like, Spirit broke down a lot of really interesting walls in terms of the way animated stories can be told, but also I rewatch Kung Fu Panda pretty much every year. So that's my dilemma there.
I think on my end, the thing that dropped Spirit down a notch for me was the villain. Primarily because he never really gets his comeuppance. Like, you see him nod at Spirit with some form of respect, which, of course, he's going to respect this horse over the indigenous person on the horse. But that tribe, that village, is going to get ransacked come a week from that point. And this is not a film that acknowledges, or, well, fully acknowledges, like, the terrible, horrible things that this villain will eventually do.
Yeah, I think they also weirdly try to redeem him at the end, which I was hella uncomfortable 100%. With. Like, the weird nod where you're like, wow, he's learned when he's beaten how respectful. And I'm like, no, this white man is going to literally ruin everything. Please, dear God, let's not humanize with him, of all things. That's a very fair point. That was the one thing that I didn't like about the film, and I also thought that the pacing was a little bit odd in terms of its, like, it sort of had forward momentum, but it also had, it was like a roller coaster. It had all of this up and down, up and down, up and down, up and down, whereas, like, Kung Fu Panda was more of the gentle, it was, like, the actual storytelling arc that is, you know, slow and meets the point and then has the conclusion, whereas Spirit is kind of like a bunch of vignettes kind of shoved together with the unifying thing being Spirit as the character, I guess.
All right, so I guess we weren't nearly as unified as I thought we were going into this. I'm voting Kung Fu Panda.
Okay. Leah?
Okay. I'll talk a little bit about kind of my decision. So, first off, like, as a kid, I loved Spirit. Like, I had the same experience as Nadia that I, like, would listen to that song and, like, run around the playground and, like, I don't know, pretend to be a horse or pretend to be, like, I don't know. It's one of those things, and I think that, like, really speaks to one of the strengths of Spirit, of how it, like, makes you feel very powerful when you watch it. And I know that's, like, a weird thing to say, but it is a generally really strong movie, and returning to it as an adult human that I am now, I expected to actually not like it as much. I was like, well, I'm sure it's, like, great when I was a kid, but, you know, now I'm gonna revisit it and it's, like, you know, not gonna be as good. And I was really pleasantly surprised coming into it. And I mean, you guys have already talked about a lot of the notes that I had about it. Like, I really like that they didn't make the horses talk. I felt like the music was really strong, and that was done by the music was done by Hans Zimmer. And a lot of these films that I've, like, noticed the music on has been done by Hans Zimmer. So he's a very talented dude, but he doesn't need me to tell him that. And I also agree with Nadia. Like, I wish that it was less talky, especially towards the beginning. Like, I felt like at the beginning it was very, like, you know, Matt Damon's little narration over the horses. And a lot of the non-Hans Zimmer music, like the kind of soft rock type music that they had, which is very early 2000s, I felt like a lot of it was a little bit too talky towards the beginning. So they'd be like, yeah. It'd be like Spirit, like pulling a train, and the guy in the song would be like, I'm working hard and I'm doing my time and it's raining out. And I was like, you don't, like, song, you don't need to tell me this. I can visually see this information happening on the screen.
Yeah.
And then it...
It's a Suicide Squad syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then as the movie went on, they sort of like trusted the audience a little bit more too, and they kind of backed off. So they had like the scene when Spirit is interacting with the lady horse that I don't know the name of, and like they're just like looking at each other and they're like moving around each other, and it's just the music is just telling you what's happening, and I thought that was really strong and like really 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 good. So yeah, I mean, I think really good overall. Kung Fu Panda is also really good. So this is like a really tough decision for me because Kung Fu Panda is great. It's beautiful. The animation is amazing. Like, I like that the movie overall is like very focused. And I felt like because they had so many side characters, it could have very easily sidetracked into like, well, this is Tigress's story, and this is Praying Mantis's story, and it was like, no, this is just Po's story, like, and his friends, and everybody is here to help him. The character design of Master Shifu honestly kind of freaks me out. I don't like his weird little teeth. It's something that I noticed in this watching, and I've seen this movie before, and I was like, why does he have, like, weird human lips and weird human teeth on this like tiny little raccoon man? So yeah, and I liked the lesson of it, like that, you know, even though the characters are flawed, they love each other despite that, and you know, that lesson that like you don't necessarily have to be the best at something, you don't necessarily have to be like good at something, but as long as you are passionate about something, that's what really counts.
Yeah, you just have to be yourself.
Exactly. Yeah.
And the things that you might think are weaknesses actually are strengths, which I thought was really sweet.
Yeah, and I like at the end that Po isn't like some like amazing kung fu master. Like, no, he still messes up, and like even in the second movie, which I know we'll talk about later, but like he still has a lot of his same personality. Like, he still gets out of breath climbing stairs, and I really like that they, you know, by the end of this movie, he wasn't some, like, amazing kung fu master. It was like, no, he's still, like, who he is. They didn't completely change that.
Yeah, and they did a really good job with that film of establishing that Po isn't gonna win because he's this master. He's gonna win because mm-hmm. of what makes him unique.
Mm-hmm.
Like, his fighting style and what he's doing, especially when they do the comparison between them fighting over the scroll and them fighting over the dumpling bun. It's like, it's very clear that in that moment when he's hiding that scroll, it's, this is a dumpling.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important to him. It's just so well done.
Yeah.
I just gotta say that I was looking up the cast to Spirit, and I forgot that the voiceover was Spirit, and I saw that Matt Damon voiced Spirit, and I was like, why did they spend so much money for Matt Damon to pretend to be a horse? They could have easily hired anyone. And I was, like, really confused and upset for, like, a solid minute, and I was like, oh, he did the voiceover, obviously. So, yeah. Putting that out there.
I guess I did pick Spirit, but I feel bad. Like, I feel like picking Spirit does Kung Fu Panda a disservice.
Yeah, I've also...
Kung Fu Panda does Spirit a disservice. Like, it's yeah, so
they have
hard.
Really different strengths.
Mm-hmm.
I'd also be okay, though, with putting...
I know what you mean.
I think that the plot of... Like, I do genuinely think that the plot of Kung Fu Panda was a better done plot. There are just aspects of Spirit in terms of, like, the mode of storytelling visually that I thought were unbelievably powerful. And I don't think that a film like that has been made since. So I'm, like, inclined to pick it simply for that. But I also, again, like, I watched it and I was like, okay, I'm not going to see this movie again probably ever. Like, that was enough for me.
No, I absolutely agree with you. I think Spirit definitely has a lot of strength. It is definitely something I want to talk about in the future. I just don't think it's better than Kung Fu Panda.
I think also spirit strengths really come out when you contextualize it in the time that it was made. Because really around that time, like, not a lot of narratives had existed that didn't follow that Disney formula and that had, like, sympathetic Native American characters. Like, I think, you know, there are those few and far between, and now we're more used to seeing that because, you know, we've sort of, more representation has come into media, but I can't think of another film from that time, and even kind of now, that had, like, a sympathetic main character that is Native American.
Mm.
And I think that says, that's, like, a really big box tick for me on this list. Because mm-hmm. a lot of these movies have a lot of white people in them.
Yep. So. Including Kung Fu Panda.
I mean...
Is there a white person in Kung Fu Panda? Wait...
I don't think there
is there a human character in Kung Fu Panda?
I legitimately just had that. I just like had this moment of like, wait, were there?
Did we watch the same film?
No, I was talking about the voice actors, you Dumbo. Yeah, you guys don't remember the scene where Po took off his head and he was just a mascot the entire time. You didn't watch the credits. It's the end scene. Come on, guys. What are you doing?
That would be, can you imagine how terrifying that would be if there's just like one white man in the middle of Kung Fu Panda?
And it's like never talked about. He's just like there in the audience of all the animals.
He's just like sitting in the noodle shop, just like a little bit scared, but eating his noodles. Just enjoying it. But yeah, I feel the same way that you do, Nadia. Like, I wouldn't be upset if Kung Fu Panda won. But also, I think, like, when we're making these decisions, you know, you kind of have to go with your gut. And so, like, I feel like your gut said spirit.
My gut did say spirit.
And I'm not just saying that because you agree with me.
Okay.
It is what I have officially down in my bracket.
Mm-hmm. All right, yeah. So that's... I am being outvoted on this one, and yeah, I respect sorry, that. Andy. You two can be wrong, and we'll put that in.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Oh, I'm pretty excited for this next
our
one.
Our number 9 oh seed, God. Ants, with a Z, and our number 24 seed, Trolls.
Without a Z.
Okay, without so a wow. Z.
The one that you wow, expect to be spelled with a Z does not have the Z.
Yeah, why?
Oh my god!
To spell it with the Z and it doesn't, and I don't know why that's the case.
Well, oh boy, golly gee, did I hate both of these movies! Oh, wow, wow!
All right, go off. Tell us.
Okay.
Yeah, please. I'm listening.
Okay, so I was wholeheartedly I watched Ants. I fell asleep in the middle because. God, there is nothing in that movie that would motivate me to stay awake. And then I had to rewatch the second half because I was asleep. And it's just a weird movie. I hate how all of the people sound like middle-aged white Jews from the Bronx. I don't know why that makes me so uncomfortable, but the voice acting felt so weird to me. It is visually just everything is brown. They didn't put any effort into making it visually pleasing at all. It's like they're underground and the dirt is brown and the ants are brown and then they get above ground and everything mm-hmm. is still brown. And I was just like, it was just such a weirdly unappealing movie to watch for me. And I like at the end of the day, it like the whole movie happened and I was like, great. So like that, like what was the point? Like, they kind of try to give you a message at the end, but it didn't really feel like a message. And, like, the things that you thought would be important weren't important. And it was just super freaking weird.
So and then did you Trolls... get this weird shock when you switched to Trolls and everything was the opposite of brown?
So, funny story. I saw Trolls once a while ago. Really didn't like it. Went to rewatch it for this bracket and got 10 minutes in and I literally couldn't do it. Like, I had to stop, and I couldn't watch it again. So I chose Ants, which I'm really mad about, for the sole purpose of, like, I made it through the whole film, and I could not do that with Trolls. And I don't know what it is, because I went into Trolls thinking that I would like it, thinking I was like, oh, this is supposed to be a crappy movie, but, like, I have a weird soft spot for, you know, like, bubblegum pink glitter, like, super stereotypically happy stuff, so I bet it's bad, but I'll like it. Mm-hmm. And then I didn't like it, and that made me even angrier, because I was like, but I should have liked it, and I didn't like it. And I also just hated the animation of the, not the Trolls, but, like, the other things. Who, oh, what the, was the, yeah. the, like, the villain, the group of villains, what are they called? I don't even remember what they're called.
I want to say Gerblins, but that's definitely not right.
Yeah, it's wrong, but, like, something.
Bergens.
And that's also yes. not right.
Bergens? Is it Bergens?
Bergens.
Is that what you said, Andy? Okay. Sure. I hated the animation of the Bergens, and I felt like it was, like, really dated animation, and that made me even angrier, because I was like, this is a newer movie, not super new, but, like, I don't know, the animation felt really stilted and weird and uncomfortable, and I just couldn't make it through a second time. And that's my rant.
So, I'll explain why I watched Ants twice. I sat down, I put on Ants, and then about 20 minutes in, I forgot that I was supposed to be paying attention to this and started playing Hades on my Switch for the entirety of the film.
So much like me, it did not capture your interest in any way.
So I forced myself to sit myself down and actually pay attention to the film that I did not want to watch. And I 100% agree with you. It's very bland. It's very, like, story-wise, it's bland. Color-wise, like, just animation-wise, it's bland and a little weird.
Yeah.
I think I also actually played Hades on my Switch while watching Ants. So
I'm glad we all had a unified experience of not being able to focus on Ants, except for Andy, who, like, really pushed through. So
I managed to escape from Hades while watching this film. Whereas with Trolls, I actually kind of like this film. It's not great in any regards, but I think it's a just fine jukebox musical. I think the one original song in the film is actually kind of a bop.
Which one is the original one?
It's the one where Anna Kendrick is walking on her way to the troll city and is like, nothing's gonna keep me down, I'm super happy and giddy. I think that song's a bop. I did cry during True Colors.
I knew you would.
I don't think I can watch that scene without crying.
That's pretty fair.
But outside of, like, some small, very well-done aspects of this film, overall it's extremely boring, it's extremely kiddish. I think this is something I would definitely enjoy if I were, like, 15 to 20 years younger. This is definitely something I would put on for a small child, but I don't think it holds up in terms of filmography. That being said, I still think it's better than Ants. I was capable of watching it from start to finish without wanting to pick up my Switch and play some random game.
I think that literally the only reason why I hated it so much is because of the Bergens. I just, looking at them made me so uncomfortable, and I cannot tell you why, but I just, like, had a really weirdly visceral reaction to their animation. But I did really enjoy the second one, so I really think it was, I think it was just them. Leah, the tiebreaker?
Yeah. I mean, Andy, you pretty much, like, took the words out of my mouth. Like, I 100% agree with what you said. Like, Ants was horrible and bad. I mean, I think you guys kind of went over how, like, terrible Ants was. And it's just, like, ant communism, I guess. And I wrote in my notes, Seeing the disembodied ant head dying on the battlefield is genuinely terrifying and horrible. So, like, it is not a children's movie. It is, there's some parts that are genuinely uncomfortable and bad to watch. Also, I felt like it having Woody Allen in it kind of was a big negative tick on my, in my opinion. And then, yeah, I mean, like I said, like, Andy, you pretty much said everything that I felt about Trolls. It's like, it was not, like, it was nothing. You know, it had no substance. And it was just, like, a just okay jukebox musical, and I kind of was okay with that. It was just, like, bright colors and singing, and I found it funny that there was an Ariana Grande song that wasn't, like, sung by anybody in the movie. It was just Ariana Grande singing an Ariana Grande song, and it was the only song that was just kind of superimposed over the action. But at the end of the day, like, yeah, if I had, like, a three-year-old, I would put Trolls on for them, because I don't think it would teach them a bad lesson, and I don't think it would be, like, negative to them. I think it could actually teach them, like, a nice lesson about sharing. But, you know, I think I didn't like Trolls because I'm so much not the audience for Trolls. So
I do have to say, I do really like the music of that film. I cannot emphasize that enough. I have gone out of my way to listen to the cover, the troll specific cover of most of these songs.
I get that. I mean, I haven't done that, but, like, the music, some of it was kind of a bop. Like, I'm not, you know, I wouldn't.
I have been convinced to change my answer from ants, because I agree that if I had a child in my care and they were like, let's watch ants, I would throw them out the window. Whereas if they were like, let's watch Trolls, I'd be like, yes, I understand, you are young. Yeah. This makes sense to me.
All right. So this is a unanimous Trolls is better than ants. Yeah. Got it.
So I changed my answer.
Literally, like, a piece of garbage that I find on the street is better than ants.
Like, my... Like,
it's not that hard to be better than ants.
Here's the thing. Ants is a film that was literally rushed into production specifically to undercut A Bug's Life. It was a ripoff of not a great film before we even had, like, an actual competition between the two studios. There's nothing enjoyable about that film, whereas I can pull out small parts of Trolls and be like, I did actually like this. I appreciated this portion of this film.
That's true. I also was, like, kind of looking forward to seeing the second one, whereas if someone was like, hey, they made a sequel to Ants, I would spend years making a paper mache shoe so that I could crush myself and then not have to see the movie.
Well, speaking of sequels, do you know they're making a sequel to Spirit?
Wait, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Wait, it's called Spirit Untamed.
Oh my god! Oh my god, I'm really... Wait, for real? Andy, what?
Yeah.
Andy, why didn't you tell
It doesn't look
this?
Good.
No,
I'm not gonna lie to you.
I'm pretty sure that the reason they're doing it is because every person on TikTok has, like, discovered Spirit and is now
Spirit,
which is
You
know, that's the thing.
Why are they making it horribly 3D animated?
Are you watching the trailer right now?
I just Googled it, and I'm just looking at the, like, 2-second clip that pops up when you hover over the trailer, and it looks like, you know, when you watch a movie and then, as you know, Disney and DreamWorks are off to do, they turn it into, like, a really crappy TV show. And, like, you watch it and, like, all of the characters are the same, but the animation is just, like, really, really off and weird and bad. That's what this movie trailer seems to me. And it also makes me really angry because the reason why I picked Spirit over Kung Fu Panda was largely because of the animation. It was literally just because of the innovation and the storytelling that they did with, like, the beautiful landscapes and cinematography of the animation. So they're literally, this is why, oh my god, you guys, this is what makes me so mad, is because people will make a really good movie and be like, this is really good. And everyone's like, yes, how good? Look at the storytelling and the music. And they're like, you just liked the horses, huh? And everyone's like, no, wait, I really liked the and they're like, you want more horses? And everyone's like, no, that's not what I liked about that. And they just completely missed the point.
I can't find a picture from Spirit 2, but there is a Spirit TV show.
I'm going to boycott this that film.
I don't know what to do with this information, but it's horrifying horses being ridden by, like, 9-year-old girls. So, like, there's Spirit and his girlfriend and another horse, and they're all being ridden by 9-year-old girls, and this was a season of a TV show, or this TV show got 4 seasons, and the whole point of the movie Spirit is don't ride him, and they... they rid him. These 9-year-old girls are riding him.
Oh my lord, this TV show is available on Netflix.
Is it a TV show or is it a movie?
No, it's a TV show. This is a Netflix original TV show, which means this was recent.
Oh my god.
This looks
also
so
I like
bad.
How from what I've seen so far, they've removed all of the representation. Oh, unless that one girl is supposed to be Native American, but...
Are we talking about the movie? Or the TV show?
The
upcoming Spirit Untamed sequel?
Oh, I'm talking about Spirit Riding Free.
Is Spirit Untamed the movie?
Spirit Untamed is the upcoming film.
Okay, because it looks like, from what I've seen, Spirit Untamed is horribly 3D animated.
Oh, geez.
And it has a bunch of 9-year-old girls on horses.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
This is where the confusion is coming from.
Okay.
It's that the film very much sounds like the TV show.
It looks awful.
Why did they take a movie that's like the entire, literally the entire lesson? Like, the thing that they drill into your head over and over throughout the movie is like, hey, don't ride Spirit. Don't do it. Just don't. Unless you get his, like, explicit consent or you are in a life and death situation, don't ride Spirit. And now on all of these, it's just, like, children riding Spirit.
I hate it.
Like, that feels like that goes against the whole, you know.
Again, they made something great and then they were like, whoops, I forgot what I made!
But I'm also just so confused, like, what time era does this take place in?
I don't know. Is it
are we still in, like, the whole we're displacing all of these natives to a different portion of our land?
Is Spirit immortal? Is an immortal god that has lived throughout all of United States history?
Oh my god.
Ridden by 9-year-old girls now? Is this what we are forced to think?
I mean, I don't know what any other logical conclusion we could. Yeah,
I would worship a wild Mustang.
Honestly, I'd worship Spirit.
I mean, yeah, but not this bastardized version.
Yeah, I would not worship this Spirit. I would worship
no.
Original.
Yeah,
system.
My spirit, not
I
that
also,
spirit.
I think.
What if the film's spirit. Really good? What if it comes out and it's really good?
I doubt that. But okay.
No. All right, good talk.
No.
I
but
like how
anyway,
we got so
okay.
We were talking about trolls and we went into spirit land.
Yeah, I don't understand why you didn't give us this information sooner. But I have one more thing to say before I explode from not saying it.
Okay.
But. Okay, so I feel like another good thing that the Spirit films did was that, like, they dealt with really adult themes. And it, again, like, rewatching it, I was like, why did I like this so much as a kid? This very much feels like an adult film. But it was. It was still, like, you know, loved and cherished by the kids that watched it when they were younger. And then it feels like we've just so declined as a society in what we think that children are capable of or what we think children are going to enjoy as consumers. Especially with it being the same story and being, well, you know, it looks like it's super weirdly watered down and, like, misses the point of the historical context and, like, the trauma of the time and, like, you know, the horrible racism. That it's like they've just forgotten that kids can be good, you know?
Well, it's like trusting kids to understand adult ideas without having to spoon feed it to them. Like, I think it shows that we've gone from like, hey, instead of like in Trolls, for example, it was like share with your friends and they had to kind of spell it out. When mm-hmm. in Spirit, you have these more complex things and they sort of trust the audience to just understand it.
All right, are we ready for this next one?
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure this is going to be a very difficult decision for us.
Oh, so
decisive.
Tough.
Yeah.
It's going to be our number 4 seed, Shrek, versus our number 29 seed, Turbo.
Well, I wonder which one you guys chose.
Yeah.
So, here's my thing. I love when a character is passionate about something. I have a soft spot for any film that depicts a character that is super passionate about something, loves what they're doing, and they put their all and succeed at the end. Turbo does this in the worst imaginable way I could ever see a film doing this.
Okay.
Whereas Shrek is a film that I love, have seen enough times that I could probably quote it. And going into this, I was like, this is a film that's just way too... I need to, like, fetter myself in some way. So, I didn't watch Shrek. Instead, I watched the Shrek musical.
Oh, Andy, no!
Oh, no! Oh, no!
So now I'm really
and
curious.
I can tell you this much. Shrek the Musical is still better than Turbo. I'm still voting for Shrek.
That was going to be my next question. I 100% also voted for Shrek. No question about it. Definitely would have picked the musical over Turbo as well. So, yep.
Yeah. I mean, same. I picked Shrek. I feel like Shrek has become such a meme that people forget that it's, like, actually a genuinely extremely good movie.
Yes!
In terms of movies. And so...
Yes!
I've sort of these past few years I've engaged in the meme part of it, and then revisiting it I was like, oh, this is like actually a legitimately really good movie, just
yeah.
in, like just solely as a movie, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah, it does a super good job. It has a really simple, consistent storyline. It has engaging characters who build relationships and grow and learn really important lessons. The soundtrack is, like, just unbelievably incredible. I think the humor is really funny, and I think that it does a really good job of focusing on the, like, singular narrative that it should. It doesn't go on a billion side streets. It doesn't introduce a billion side characters. I think, honestly, that's probably what I would say would be the weakness of the later films, is it kind of tries too hard to bring in side characters as larger characters, whereas the first one is just, it's really tight and it's really focused, and it is just a wonderful story about love and acceptance, and I care about it very, very deeply.
All right.
Yeah.
Shrek!
I mean, that's, yeah. I think I will say, like, one more thing about Turbo before we, like, move on, is that Turbo fell into the same pitfall that I think that Abominable fell in, where it was like it was trying so hard to be a Disney Pixar movie and it just fell so flat.
Yes. Oh my god.
Yeah.
Okay. Yes. So as somebody who has found a way to talk about Cars on pretty much every single episode that we have ever recorded because it is my favorite Pixar movie, I love it. Because in reality, I do not like Cars. Like the vehicle, eh! I am a public transit girl, and I will die on that bridge. But I love the movie, and I feel like Turbo took all of the worst things about Cars being, like, the literal vehicles, and then turned it into a movie where I was watching, like, because I can watch Cars, and I can, like, completely suspend the fact that they're cars. I love it, I love the characters, I love everything about it. When I watched Turbo, I was just angry about the fact that NASCAR is even a thing. Like, I was just angry about cars as vehicles the whole time.
Yeah, this felt like Cars the movie, but bad. Like,
yes.
If they made a lot worse creative decisions when making Cars.
Yep.
I'm not gonna lie to you, I was trying to rush through that explicitly to avoid the Cars reference.
Andy!
But you know what? I didn't quite make it there.
How can you take that away from me? It's okay, you can cut it out. I'll make it through.
So are we done ranting about Turbo?
Yeah. Yep, sorry, we're good.
Are we good?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right. So the next matchup, our number 13 seed, Puss in Boots, versus our number 20 seed, Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
I like that you said it like Peabody instead of Peabody.
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 Peabody. Peabody da dee dee do do. Dee da dee
do. Okay, I guess I'll go first with this. I was surprised how much I liked Puss in Boots. I really thought that, like, it was visually really impressive, especially as sort of a spinoff of Shrek. I thought it was going to be, like, a less effort movie. You know, they were going to be like, well, let's just make, like, a stupid movie about, like, Puss in Boots and just, you know, do whatever. But, like, there are a few times when I noticed that, like, the animation or, like, even the lighting or even, like, camera work, you know, I know it's an animated movie, but like the cinematography looked really nice. I did like the story. I did not like the liar reveal at the end, because I am so tired of liar reveal stories. And another note that I have that I noticed is that the guy that voices one of the penguins in Penguins actually directed this movie, which I really like. But overall, I would say Puss in Boots, I remember the visuals. I don't really remember the story. Like, the visuals is what stuck with me. And I would say Peabody and Sherman is, like, the exact opposite, where it's, like, I remember more the story than I really remember the visuals. I thought that the voice acting was good. But I was sort of wondering, like, who is this movie made for? Like, is it made for people who watched the original cartoon? Or is it made for, like, kids now? And another issue I had with it is, like, Penny as a character is so unlikable. They did not give her any redeeming qualities. I literally just wanted to watch, like, Peabody and Sherman have, like, adventures in history. I didn't want to see Penny come in and, like, have her attitude.
Also, like, definitely never apologize.
Yeah, exactly. Like, she never had a moment she was like, wow, I was wrong. I was acting really annoying. No, she just was mean all the time.
In fact, she gets multiple moments where she was like, yeah, I was kind of right on this.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And I feel like you can, like, make a villain, quote unquote, or like a kind of mean character that is redeeming in some ways. Like, you give them a few redeeming qualities that as a viewer, especially you can like them.
Yeah, and especially for a kid show, like, how valuable would it have been for this to be a moment for Penny to, like, genuinely apologize and be like, I'm sorry, I was wrong. I'm gonna learn about the way that I treated you and then become better. But that just, like, literally never happens.
Yeah. So I guess between the both, I feel like they're equal. So I want to hear what you guys have to say and kind of let that sway my decision.
So, full disclosure, I did not finish Puss in Boots because I am a trash person and I am a big baddie. I started it one day and I was, like, cooking while I was watching it and I was paying attention and I just was, like, not taken by it. And so I never got around to finishing it. I'm so sorry. I thought it was because, like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's pretty much just, like, a weird vignette film where it, like, goes into a character and it's like, ah, my backstory, and then it jumps into another character and it's like, here's my backstory, and it kind of tells all these other little stories in the context of the big story. Does that continue throughout the whole film, or is that just the chunk that I stopped after?
I think that's just the chunk that you stopped after. Because it definitely has, like, a larger sort of
overall. Yeah, no, the backstories that are given are definitely, like, super relevant to the overall plot.
Because it felt like, because it goes into Puss's backstory and then it goes into the other female cat's backstory, whose name I can't remember. And it, like, set it up for me where I thought it was just going to be, like, a series of short stories that had a single kind of tie that connected them, but was told in that way. And I was just kind of weirdly uninterested in that, so I kind of stopped prematurely, which is my bad. But I also feel the same way about Mr. Peabody and Sherman, where, like, I enjoyed it more than I thought I would in terms of, like, their adventures, and I, you know, I thought that was really sweet, but I, like, the whole weird Penny thing just made me so angry, because, again, she just never acknowledges her wrongdoing, and is just, like, still kind of a bully, but then because they're friends, it's okay, which is not, like, that's an actively bad message to send to kids, so, I ended up picking Mr. Peabody and Sherman just because I, like, made it through the whole movie, but I am very not strongly tied to that opinion.
For me, Puss in Boots is a strange addition to the Shrek movie franchise, where Shrek is very much, we're going to take these fairy tales and we're going to be a subversive telling of it and not really play into the tropes that you get in your general fairy tales. Whereas Puss in Boots genuinely feels like this got pulled straight out of a fairy tale book. It doesn't try to make fun of the fairy tale genre the way that Shrek does. It just sort of leans into it and is just a nice fairy tale. I think this is a film that, without all that much substance, is somewhat enjoyable throughout. I didn't hate watching the whole thing. I can't say that I would go back and seek it out later on, but I'm not mad that I sat through the whole thing. Whereas Mr. Peabody and Sherman, to me, felt very much like, what if we took Rick and Morty and made it much more kid-friendly?
An interesting comparison. I hadn't thought of that.
You get that sort of, like, Mr. Peabody is this all-knowing, functionally a god and able to get themselves out of any situation. And, like, they even acknowledge it in the film. And I, as a fan of Rick and Morty, that's a dynamic that I had somewhat enjoyed. So I, watching this film, like, I definitely got a lot of enjoyment out of it. I definitely agree with the issues with Penny. Not the greatest individual, not at all. Her actions are not at all justified throughout. And at no point does she apologize for making a remark that could very well be taken in a very discriminatory place. Like, this is the inciting incident for Penny and Sherman to be in this situation is not acceptable in any way, and they never really acknowledge that.
Correct.
This is also a pairing that I had a hard time deciding between one.
I think it's interesting what you talk about, like, is thinking about Puss in Boots in the context of the SCU, the Shrek Cinematic Universe. because I think I liked Puss in Boots as, like, like is a strong word, but, like, I think I approached Puss in Boots as, like, an independent movie from the SCU, but looking at it within the SCU, I like it a lot less. But if I think about it as, like, an independent thing of, like, oh, DreamWorks just made, like, a Puss in Boots story, I like it more.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Like, the events of this film don't really add to Puss's character in any way.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it didn't add to my enjoyment or, like, understanding of Shrek 2 is when he's introduced, right? So, like,
yes.
It didn't, like, give me much character insight. It didn't make me look at him in Shrek 2 any different. I was like, okay, well, he's just the same. I don't know. He's the same thing. I guess if I had to pick one, I think I would pick Puss in Boots, but I don't feel particularly passionate about that.
I am also in the same boat. I can be swayed, but I think if they are dressed in any way, Penny's whole being honestly somewhat racist.
Yeah, just her whole being. Like,
yeah, just that whole character, and if they address that in any way in the actual film, I'd be much more on Mr. Peabody and Sherman, but I think that's the one thing that pulls me away from that.
Yeah, I completely agree.
I wouldn't want, like, a kid to watch that and think that that behavior is acceptable. I mean, you guys have said
exactly.
It. Exactly. I don't love stories that rely on, like, characters making mistake after mistake after mistake after mistake to get them into a situation. It felt like that movie was like, oh, okay, well, somebody messed up, and then somebody messed up, and then somebody messed up, and then somebody messed up, and it's like, okay, well, now we have to get ourselves out of this. I don't love movies like that, so.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Our next matchup is our number 5 seed, How to Train Your Dragon 2, versus our number 28 seed, Madagascar, Escape Africa 2.
So hard! What a hard choice, oh my god. Oh man, guys, this is really gonna be, I think this is gonna be the one that's gonna tear our friendship apart. I don't know if we're gonna make it through this. Yeah.
Ooh. Might as well call it quits here. That's just...
Yeah, this is the end.
Yeah, so we all loved Madagascar 2 Escape Africa, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, what a gem.
Obviously. Yep.
So good.
Yeah.
All right, I'll just mark it down, we can move on to the next one.
Yeah, so that was a horrible, 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 horrible movie, and I enjoyed How to Train Your Dragon 2 so much more the second time watching it than I did in theaters, really weirdly enough. Was not expecting that.
Weirdly, me too.
Oh, girl, yes.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I felt like Madagascar 2 was, like problematic in ways that we don't even have time to go into here. just, like, there was so much. And it was I think the note that I wrote down that like really stood out to me is I was like, this movie just feels like a bunch of like the bits from one that were funny just dragged out and like loosely connected with just like a limp story that doesn't like mean anything or go anywhere.
Yeah, and there wasn't a whole lot that was funny from the first one, so.
Yeah, I will say, in my Wikipedia searching for this movie, the Wikipedia page for Mort, who's like the little dude.
Yeah, the one that's always trying to not die.
Yeah.
Oh my god, his name is Mort? That's actually really, that's funny. I'll give them that.
I'm going to read a quote out from this Wikipedia page that is the most wild sentence that I've ever read in my entire life.
Oh boy.
In All Hail King Julian Exiled, which is like a show, it is revealed that Mort is a species that is immortal and can suck out the life force of other Morts, giving them multiple personalities. This explains Smart Mort, a certain form of alter ego of his own, which appears to be a version of himself from another multiverse where he is an intelligent character. It is also revealed that Mort sucked out his grandmother's life force, and she now lives inside his mind. Mort is also portrayed to be Jewish, as seen in Carl McFadden, after his grandfather shows up, and a flashback appears of Mort as a child getting a present on Hanukkah from Grandpa Mort. I just need to highlight that here.
Wait, this is revealed in the Madagascar TV show centered around King Julian.
Yes. So Mort is a god that has sucked out the life force of his grandparents, and also he is Jewish.
And this is canonical.
This is canonical
to the Madagascar franchise.
This is true. This is absolutely canonically true. And I don't know what to do with this information.
There is a TV show that explicitly states these things that you said.
Yes, there is a true canonical TV show created by the people at DreamWorks that is canonically makes this true. And his Wikipedia page, I suggest everybody go look up his like Madagascar fandom Wikipedia page and just read it, because it is such a good time. Like, please go do it.
Oh my god. That
okay
was amazing.
Yeah. So that was the only good part of Madagascar 2. And it was,
thank you for sharing.
Yeah, you're welcome.
That's the best news that I've gotten all week. That was so funny. How is that funnier than the entire movie?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I do want to say one thing. I did enjoy Madagascar Escape Africa 2 more than the first Madagascar.
Interesting. How come?
Madagascar is not a good film.
Oh, no. No.
Madagascar 2 feels like they took Madagascar and actually tried to make you feel for the characters in it, actually make the characters relevant plot-wise, and actually make some funny jokes here and there. I really like the penguins in this film.
Okay, yeah.
I'm gonna be 100% honest with you, and this might be a bit of foreshadowing for later on in this bracket, but I think the penguins are the only redeeming quality of all of the Madagascar films.
Andy, same. And this is foreshadowing, and we're gonna talk about this later. The Penguins movie is so good, and for
the
what?
The Penguins movie's real good. The Penguins movie's real good. I can't stress it. It's the best Madagascar film to date. So absolutely good. Hands down.
Why is it so good? It made me cry. Like, but yeah, the penguins are the best part about Madagascar to escape Boogaloo.
Escape yeah. I haven't seen the Penguins movie.
To Madagascar, Africa, escape.
Madagascar, to Africa and away from Africa. Movie number two. The second.
I will also point out, this is one of those problematic things that I was saying we don't have time to get into. It was such a... I hated that they did not specify where in Africa, but in the third one they specified where they were in Europe. In the second one, the entire time it was like, where in Africa? And I'm like, that's a continent. Want to be more specific? And then the third one, they were like, we're in France. We're in Belgium. And I'm like, okay, so we're just generalizing a whole continent here, but like, when it comes to Europe, we can specify countries. All right. Okay. Cool.
Good point.
I mean, they even specified it in the first film. They were like, you are in Madagascar, you are going to a Kenyan reserve.
Yeah, and it doesn't even, like, it doesn't have to be a realistic place. Just pick a country. Like, this is Madagascar, so I'm not trying to ask too much, but just pick one place. Just, like, just something.
And it's not even like they had the entire continent of Africa to pick from. They literally just had to pick any of the ones that border Madagascar in any way.
Yeah, just pick one on, like, the eastern side. We're not being picky here. Just choose one. Yeah.
Let's talk about how attractive Hiccup is.
Oh yeah.
Moving on to the good stuff.
Yeah.
Unless there's anything else you want to yell about.
Amazing.
Yeah, I remember, because Leah, I think we saw it in theaters together, right? Or was that... Yeah.
I think we saw two in theaters together, and I think we actually also saw three in theaters together.
Okay, because I remember when we left, and remind me if I'm, like, completely misremembering this, but I feel like we left after the second one, and we're, like, less impressed than we expected to be. Is that... Am I remembering the first viewing correctly? Because I feel like we went into it with, like, we were super excited, and we left, and we were like, yeah, okay, it was a good movie, but, like, not as good as the first one, and not as good as we expected. Is that correct?
Like I was saying to Andy earlier, I don't remember that happening, but I believe that that happened.
Okay. That's what I remember. Oh, yeah, okay. So here, because we got ourselves a bunch of grocery store donuts to make us feel better, because we were expecting to really like it, and we were disappointed, so we got ourselves those, like, mini ones. Yeah, okay. So that's what happened. I remember
that. That sounds like something we'd
see...
do.
That sounds like something that would happen. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That
sounds like the two of you.
Yep.
Yeah.
Seeing it the second time, I really liked it. I liked it a lot more than I expected to. And I remember specifically, Andy, you've mentioned that you liked the second one more than the first one, and I was really mad at you.
I think so here's my thing. All three of the How to Train Your Dragon films, in my eyes, sort of flip-flop their place in terms of which I believe is better.
Yeah, I can totally see that.
After... Because I've already started on the next 16 films, and after having watched the original How to Train Your Dragon, I don't know if I still stand on that statement.
Okay, yep, that makes sense to me. But basically, I remember being very mad at you for making the statement that you thought the second one was better, and after seeing the second one, I still didn't agree, but I was like, you know what? That is not as abysmal of a statement. Yeah, I was like, you know what? I will give him credit. I think they do a fantastic job of aging the characters. I think just, like, the little moments they show between Hiccup and Astrid that, like, showcase their relationship and their, just, like, the trust and the care that they built for each other in between the space of where the first movie ends and where the second movie picks up is just so good. Like, they do such a good job of having these characters kind of live and breathe in between what the film shows us, and then showing us yes. in these, like, really, you know, delicate ways the bits that we've missed in terms of, you know, like, Hiccup and Astrid developing their relationship, in terms of the way that his dad has shifted as a leader for, like, all of the tribe, like, all of these things that we don't get to see. It makes you understand that these characters are on a path and a trajectory, and that they have continued to grow. And I think that that is super cool for something that a sequel is able to do. I thought that the second film was hysterical, and, like, all of the moments with, I don't remember if which one is, like, Ruffna and Tuffna, I don't remember which one is which, but, like, the female one, she is so funny, and, like, the moment where she's going in slow motion, and she, like, sees the guy that she thinks is attractive, yeah. and it, like, suddenly slows down, and she's like, oh, yeah, and then he shoots her, and she spreads her arms wide and goes, take me now. I thought that was one of the funniest things I've seen in a really long time, and
That's
relatable, the type of scene,
honestly,
that I watch and then I pause and rewind to rewatch just to see it again, because I genuinely thought that that was just hysterical. I thought this movie was beautiful. I loved it so much. I am unbelievably attracted to Hiccup, which is incredibly frustrating. Also Astrid, like, what right do they have to create these two beautiful characters, and what right do they have putting them together and not including me? So I loved it. Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, same. Like, it's great. And I had a similar thing with you, as I, like, expected not to like it as much as the first one. And I don't know how I'm going to choose. If it comes down between the first and the second one, like, I legitimately, that's going to be a tough decision.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Good. And I think what you're saying about letting the characters just, like, live between them is so good, and it makes it so, like, real. Like, you feel like they're actual people that you're, like, mm-hmm. are checking in with every few years. And I liked how Burke changed visually between the first and mm-hmm. the second movie. So it feels like, additionally, like, not only the characters have grown, but, like, the setting has grown and mm-hmm. and matured and, like, become something new. And you can see how, like, the infrastructure of Burke has changed with the integration of the dragons into the society. And the music is just as great as the first one. I don't mm-hmm. know who did the music for this one. Yeah.
Oh, the music in the first one's so good, too.
The music in the first one is, like, the best thing. Just
yeah, the soundtrack the pretty much thing. Makes me cry every time. Like, I just think it's so beautiful. I also cry pretty much every time they do a scene where he's, like, flying on Toothless, because it always has this beautiful score, and it's always just, like, this. I think that a lot of DreamWorks movies have this problem where they don't give these quiet moments to breathe, and it's just sort of this, like, mm-hmm, nonstop mm-hmm. action, nonstop jokes, nonstop momentum. And then when you look at, you know, like, the polar opposite, I guess, for me would be Studio Ghibli movies for kids, where there are these, like very much integrated to the film are these quiet moments where, like, nothing really happens, and it's just showing the scenery or showing a character just sitting and doing something, and it's just these, like, really wonderful pauses within the story. And I think How to Train Your Dragon does that really well with the scenes where they're flying, because it mm-hmm. it just gives you a second to just kind of feel something, but not have it have there be this pause to the action or the momentum of the story. And it always makes me cry, because I just find it so unbelievably beautiful. Like, again, it is not a sad thing or a happy thing. I just, it, like, gets me, and it just makes me feel mm-hmm. things. And I love it. I love it so much.
So I think the final matchup before we wrap things up is going to be our number 12 seed, Captain Underpants, the first Captain Underpants film, versus our number 21 seed, Rise of the Guardians.
Okay. I just gotta say,
I do want to ask, what is everyone's experience with the Captain Underpants franchise as a whole?
I never really read it as a kid. It, like, wasn't, like, you know, you always saw them being sold at, like, the Scholastic fairs, and they were always just, like, a thing that I was aware of, but I never actually read any of them myself.
Yeah, same. I sort of saw them in, like, around, but I never actually, like, read them myself, because I think that they are, like, and I hate, like, gendering things, but I feel like they were sort of always advertised or like gendered as like boy books. And so as a kid, I never read them because I didn't think that they were like for me.
Well, I was obsessed with Captain Underpants growing up.
Of course.
Oh my god, of course. I love those books with
all of my heart. I think this film does a great job of capturing those books and the spirit of those books.
I genuinely loved this movie, I gotta say. Like, I never read it as a kid, so when I heard they were making a movie, I kind of wrote it off as like, oh, okay, sure, whatever, I don't really care. And then I remember, I think that somebody told me, or I noticed that it had pretty good reviews, and I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I watched it, and I was like, you know what? I 100% think that it was a really well-made, really good movie. I liked it the first time, I rewatched it, I liked it the second time. Larry was kind of puttering around the house when I was watching it, when I was rewatching it for the podcast, and he kind of like got sucked into it, and it genuinely made us both laugh quite a bit, like multiple times. I like it. I think it was really well done. I think it captures the original care of the series. I think it does a really awesome job of like making reference to the print medium of it. And I also just thought it was really good. The scene where they're all sock puppets, like, that's hysterical.
Oh yeah, 100%. And it pulls from so much. Like, there, like the Flip-O-Rama was something that was available in multiple Captain Underpants books. And, like, I remember ripping them exactly the way they did in the film.
Yeah, that's what Larry mentioned, that. He thought that was really funny, and I was like, what? And he was like, yeah, because I always used to rip the pages. And I was like, oh. Also, like, male friendships? I am here for that. I am here for sentimental, caring, loving male friendships. And that was pretty much the entire point of this film. And then the Weird Al song that played at the end, I will 100% judge a movie for the end credit song that they did. And I like this movie, like, as a movie. And then during the end credit song, I was like, well, you just added, like, an extra golden star on top of it all because I thought it was so good.
Are you guys ready for the upset of the century?
Oh, yeah. Rip our hearts apart.
I really did not like this movie.
Oh,
but,
no!
But I will say, I also acknowledge that I am absolutely not the audience for this movie. So I don't necessarily hold that against it. Like, I agree with you, Nadia. I think it was really lovely to see, like, two young boys being friends, and I thought that friendship was really cute and felt like very realistic to like how kids interact with each other and how friendships are, and I thought it was like very sweet, and I did find the comedy in it really funny in places. So like I felt like the slapstick was really great when he gets hit by a car when he's running out of the office. It was like just cartoony enough that it made me crack up. It was so funny. However, and this is with a big asterisk, because like I said, I acknowledge I am not the person that this movie is for, because I have no prior Captain Underpants experience. I am not like a child. I felt like the toilet humor got really old really, really quick for me. Like, I feel like it's okay if you're going to disperse it a little bit, but it was like every single joke was toilet humor. And I was just like, I got so sick of it. I got so tired of it. And I really, really, really did not like the animation.
I love the animation. Interesting.
I felt like making it in CGI was a mistake, because the transference of like the 2D characters to the 3D was weird looking. It made them look like weird, like fleshy blobs.
And I thought it kind of felt like a playoff of claymation, kind of. That's how my brain processed it.
But I wish that they, like, made it look more claymation-y then. Because I feel like CGI has gotten to this point where we can make things look so realistic. And so they would have these, like, really realistic elements in it that were, like, the textures and, like, the lighting. And it would look so weird against, like, these really stylized people. And so I just kind of wish that it was 2D animated or, like, even in claymation instead. And I wish that it, like, Like, I wish that it just came out 10 years ago and in 2D animation. That also all being said, I liked this movie more than I liked Rise of the Guardians, or at least I picked this movie over Rise of the Guardians, because I think that Captain Underpants is a stronger movie than Rise of the Guardians.
I was expecting to not like it precisely because of the Twilight humor, and I, again, like that is not really my brand of humor, but I think that I thought that they did a lot of jokes that, again, were slapstick, and then they had the things where, I don't know, like, how to phrase it, but, like, where you thought something would happen and then something else happened, and that was really funny. And I thought that they had a lot of elements where they used the storytelling as a mode of humor, like, the weird flashback they had where they were, like, imagining what the future would be, and they were suddenly sock puppets. And I just thought that,
yeah,
like, that choice was really funny, and I think that, like, I zeroed in more on that humor than, like, the intentional jokes that they made, and I thought they did a really good job of making this, like, the overall storytelling of the plot humorous and not just, like, the punchy jokes that they do, because I feel like a lot of DreamWorks movies aren't funny and they just try to punch you with jokes, whereas I thought that the overarching, like, way that this movie was crafted was inherently just really silly and goofy and funny beyond just the jokes that they were telling. So yeah, I loved it.
Yeah, absolutely. So DreamWorks, a lot of the DreamWorks films have a fairly large amount of gag body humor. There's a lot of fart jokes, there's a lot of burp jokes. And I think of all of the DreamWorks, this is the one film where I go in and this is what I expect from it.
Yeah.
Like, this is the one film that has that excuse of being able to lean on those as actual jokes. But it's also refreshing because it doesn't fully rely on that.
Although, I don't know. I don't think there will be anything funnier than all of the eggs with legs from Rise of the Guardians.
So here's my thing with Rise of the Guardians. I love taking existing lore and putting a twist to it like that. I love the whole, like, Santa came from this area of the world, he's going to have these elements about him, and this is how he's going to fight, and this is how he's going to protect, and this is what he is, and this is who he is. I love all of that. Rise of the Guardians feels like the most generic way to go about doing this.
Yeah, also, as our resident Jewish friend... was really mad that they were like, these are all of the, like, it just, like, completely, and again, I understand, like, you know, Christmas has become very cultural, and in many ways it is separate from the religion, but, like, they were like, there are, what, like, a certain number of guardians, and each of these guardians represent this, like, specific thing, and they're guardians of, like, the whole world, and you've got the Sandman, who isn't, I don't really know much about the Sandman, isn't a religious figure, right? Like, in any way. Jack Frost isn't.
Yeah, I think he's more religious... like a lore piece. Like,
unless I'm totally wrong.
Yeah.
And but then you have the Easter Bunny and Santa, which are like explicitly tied to religious things, and that just made me like unbelievably angry. What is Santa looking over all the Jewish kids? I mean, thanks, yeah. I guess. But like, I don't know. It just made me feel weird that. I did think the eggs were really funny. All of the egg jokes, because I also really like eggs. So I was there for all the egg-related humor, but that was pretty much, like, the highlight for me.
Yeah, I think that... So something that I did like, that I will give Rise of the Guardians, is, like Andy said, I like when they kind of put a twist on something, and I thought that the character design specifically of all of the Guardians was, like, very clever. Like, especially, like, the Tooth Fairy, I really liked kind of that, like, hummingbird motif that they brought in. Mm-hmm. I thought that that was really good. But, yeah, generally, I thought it was just, like, eh. And this movie, like, okay, one, Jack being voiced by, like, a grown man threw me off every single time that he would speak. Because I was like, this is not the voice that should come out of this, like, seemingly, like, 14-year-old boy. Like, this is the voice of, like, a 35-year-old man. And I felt like it yo-yoed a lot in tone, so they would have this, like, really, like, sweet moment, and then it would be, like, this horrible, terrifying moment, and it would be this really nice moment, and they didn't give you any, like, transition between it. And it felt kind of very busy, And, like, there are just a lot.
Is Chris Pine 35?
I don't know how old Chris Pine is, but he's older than he should be for...
He's not 14!
Yeah, exactly. And I felt like it kind of just... It felt too busy. Like, I would rather they just centralize it. Like, kind of almost do, like, a Kung Fu Panda thing where it's, like, it's just about Jack. Like, nobody else really matters. And also, I found it really kind of disturbing that, like, Jack is just, like, dead. And...
Yeah, that was also another spoiler. Very upsetting thing. But, like, oh, yeah, wow.
Spoiler. Wait, Jack died?
He's just, like, straight up, like, dead. And they just never, like, acknowledge or talk about that. Like, his sister watched him die. And they just were like, all right, I guess you're a guardian. Time to move on. Like, he's dead.
Yeah, I know. Oh, no, also, another thing.
Chris Pine, update. Chris Pine was 32 upon the release of this film.
Oh, wow. You were close, Leah.
Hell yeah. Okay, two more things that really bothered me about this movie is that the ending, and another spoiler, like, this whole motif of, like, bad guy gets eaten by his own minions, or, like, bad guy falls off cliff and dies, is, like, it's sort of seen as this, like, acceptable alternative to the good guys, like, defeating or, like, killing the bad guy. But, like, that's not okay. It's like, if you know, because you're not preventing it from happening, like, that means that it's not okay, you know? And so, like,
it's the Batman Begins logic, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. And so it's like, the bad guy at the end of this movie gets, like, eaten by his own minions, and just nobody tries to, like, stop it or, like, save him. They just, like, let him die. And I was like, that doesn't make you good people. That doesn't make you heroes. Like, you let a man die in front of you, and you just accepted it.
If the horses were made out of the Sandman sand, too, and their whole point was that they, like, the whole point is that they, like, gravitate towards fear, right? And, like, target...
I believe it's that they are manifestations of
fear. Yeah, they're manifestations of fear. So... And the fact that they killed him was because he was so afraid, right? That they, like, zero in and, like, I don't even understand it. But what, are they just gonna let those guys, like, run around now and kill people who are scared? Like,
they've, like, unleashed a horrible monstrosity upon the world and they're just okay with that?
Either they, like, change them back, which is, like, great, okay, so you could have done that the whole time, or they just let them... wreak havoc on children who are scared a lot because they're children.
Yeah. And I also, like, I found the lesson of this movie really bizarre, too, because I was thinking about, like, while watching these, like, what do they want me to get out of this movie? Like, if I was a child, what lesson would they want? And I think the lesson
believe in your pseudo-Christian ideals and nothing else. Yeah, duh. Exactly.
But the last line
Christianity
of the
will protect you. So, sucks to
like,
suck.
Is that what it is? But, like, the last line of the movie is, if the moon tells you something, believe it. Is that the lesson that they wanted
I mean,
to
that's
out?
Essentially just religion. If
Am
they
I just
say
supposed
it, it
to
has
listen
to be
the
true.
Moon now?
Yeah. Yes, Leah.
Like, because I'm not against that, but, like, I don't think that that's, like, a good lesson to come away
with. Yeah, I don't think any movie should be, like, if anyone tells you something, do it. That is a bad thing.
All right, so just to confirm, we are unanimously deciding on Rise of the Guardians, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yep. Rise of the Guardians. Got it. And then it's going to go up against Madagascar Escape to Africa, which is going to be a really tough choice, because I think those are my two favorite films, you know?
Favorite films ever.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
I think that we should all agree right now that next Halloween, we're all going to dress up as characters from Madagascar Escape to Africa.
Yes, I don't see any situation or any scenario in which that could go horribly wrong.
I will definitely dress up as a character from Madagascar Africa Escape 2.
Yes. Don't confuse it with dressing up as a character from Madagascar Escape from Africa 3, the movie before 2, because that's a separate film, and I will be really upset if you're a character from that one. So
I call
that is a horrible movie.
It's fine. I will dress up as a character from Madagascar Forever After.
I will dress up as a character from Rise of the Guardians, and I will be Boy Jack
Jesus himself.
Before he is dead. I will be alive Boy Jack, not Jesus. Sad boy dead Jack.
Okay, then I will dress up as Ant at Fun Ants.
Yes. Our favorite DreamWorks character, the ant from Ants.
I think, Leah, that you should push yourself and you should come dressed up as every single ant all at once.
And then I will follow in Woody Allen's footsteps and go marry my 17-year-old stepdaughter and, you know.
Yep.
Just
there's
no
better. There's no better way to live, am I right?
Yeah, good.
We're gonna tear up the club scene next year in our Halloween costumes.
Once COVID is over, you bet your sweet butt I'm gonna put on my aunt's cosplay and go to a bar and just see how many numbers I can get from strangers.
Oh yeah. And people will be like, what an enchanting costume. Who are you? And I'll be like, I'm Jack Frost before his tragic demise. Talk to me further and find out how I died. And then they'll be like, wow, what a unique individual. And then they'll be like, you're not like other girls. And I'll be like, that's right, I'm a dead boy. And it'll be great.
Anyway, I think it's a good time to start wrapping things up. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the other half of this bracket, and then at some point we're gonna finish this terrible nightmare that I started. Well, we have been Animation Meditation. This has been the first half of round one of our March Madness bracket. If you'd like to find us, we are available at animedpod at gmail and Twitter. Next week, not in 2 weeks, we will be finishing off this round one of these films. If you have any comments or anything you'd like to say, feel free to reach out to us. Thank you for listening. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.